Okay, everybody, workday's over.
This is the best of the OG with Ovius and Giglio podcast, part of the Capital Broadcasting Podcast Network. Brought to you by Capital Financial Advisory Group. Get your total retirement income plan by texting JOE to 21000. Enjoy the best of today's show. Here's Ovius and Giglio.
Respect Cam Newton. I feel like that's how we have to start. Cam Newton made his return to Bank of America Stadium yesterday. They lose to the Washington football team. And I guess, I don't know, sometimes I should probably not be on the internet following a sporting event because I get a little too wrapped up in how people are talking about things. And based on what I saw on Sunday, I thought Cam Newton played well. Threw two touchdowns, ran for another score. And yet, with the loss, the attitude seemed to be, same old Panthers with Cam Newton. I'm like, whoa. What? Did we watch the same game? I don't feel like we watched the same game. I can't exactly put that on Cam Newton when he only has one possession to work with in the third quarter. It's hard to evaluate the win or the loss on Cam Newton specifically when the defense couldn't get off the field in critical situations. It's hard to really evaluate Cam Newton, who, again, I thought played pretty well, when the coaching staff looks like they haven't quite gotten a grasp of this NFL thing. I also am having a hard time putting this on Cam Newton when the penalties keep stacking up. So again, this is probably my own fault where I should take my own advice, Giglio, where I should probably not look at my mentions or get on the internet following sporting events because people sometimes have interesting takeaways from what they just saw.
It's 3rd and 21. Game's tied at 21. Cam Newton just threw a perfect pass to Christian McCaffrey.
Mm-hmm.
Fourth quarter. There's 11 minutes left in the fourth quarter.
Mm-hmm.
Then it's 3rd and 21. Well, that drive, first of all, gets extended, as you mentioned, by a stupid penalty by Justin Burris. The Panthers really are never going to draft an NC State player. They've signed like three in their history. 3rd and 21. They pick up 18 yards and then convert on 4th and 3.
Mm-hmm.
If you're the Panthers and you're Matt Rhule and you're going to be about that life, if you say you're about that life, be about that life.
Riverboat Rhule?
No, if you're going to be, hey, we're going to build with defense and special teams,
mm-hmm.
guess what? You got to play defense. You can't let a team convert on 3rd and 21.
Yeah.
That's where the game was lost. So unless Cam Newton was on the field for 3rd and 21, I don't really want to hear a blame assigned to the quarterback. Now, there's a different conversation here. You know, you have something of a love affair with Cam Newton. You're on the side of, and that's what Cam is.
Mm-hmm.
You're looking at me slightly strange, but that's what Cam is. He's polarizing. People love him,
sure,
or they want to blame him.
Sure.
Right? It's silly either way. Like, when they win, it's, oh, well, it was the defense, or it was this, or it was that. Oh, it was Luke Kuechly, or it was the running back they paid too much.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And when they lose, it's, oh, it's always Cam.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's your frustration. But 3rd and 21 is an issue. The defense now against the Eagles, against the Vikings, in games where... Again, if you say your defense and if you say, oh, whatever, I almost used the bad word. If you say your nonsense, oh, we're second in the NFL and whatever defensive stat nonsense you want to come up with, then be about that defensive stat nonsense and come up with a stop and get off
you
the field.
You mean Kirk Cousins and the Vikings who just out-dueled Aaron Rodgers, the baddest man alive? No, I'm kidding. That was one of and that actually gets to
And the Eagles look pretty good, too.
So. Well, the fact is, and this actually gets to a larger point with the NFL and I guess the frustration point for the Carolina Panthers, especially when they play an out-of-characteristic game defensively like they did against the Washington football team. You know, we sit here and we talk about the motivations of the Carolina Panthers, right? Cam Newton's motivated to be back. He's motivated to prove people wrong. He's motivated to make his second chance in Carolina the most, right? He actually talked about it after the game when he talked about not upholding their end of the bargain. He wanted fans to show up to Bank of America Stadium, right? They showed out. He gave them an early show, especially after he ran for the score and then ran all the way back to the Panthers logo and put the ball there at midfield. Now, there was no taunting penalty in that case, or any sort of unsportsmanlike in that situation because it was at home. So good on the referees, who I blasted the week before for throwing a flag. I get it's an automatic thing because he took his helmet off, but good on the officials for not throwing a flag in that situation because that is a time and place. He's back. It's emotional. The fans are feeding off of it. He runs back. He gives everything that everybody wanted. except for the win, and that's what Cam Newton talked about after the game.
They upheld the end of the bargain. We gotta do our part, you know. I mean, the energy in there was electric. I mean, it was good juju in there. But characteristics as a team, we got to be better. Third down, got to have it situations. And coach had his, you know, keys to victory that we didn't execute in its totality throughout the game. And that's what it pretty much comes down to, you know. I did challenge the fans. The fans came, they saw, and, you know, they supported. And, you know, having an atmosphere like that and games moving forward in November, December, you know, it's pretty much going to come down to, you know, execution. And we didn't do that enough as a team here today.
That was Cam Newton after the loss to the Washington football team. I talked about the motivations from Cam Newton and this Panther squad of trying to make a playoff run, right? But let's also not forget about the motivations on the other side. This was Ron Rivera coming back to Bank of America Stadium as the head coach of the Washington football team, where he was the head coach of the Carolina Panthers. There was some extra juice for him. There was probably some extra juice for Taylor Heinicke, too, a guy who was the butt of jokes as the backup for Cam Newton to go out there, and that dude balled out, so credit to Taylor Heinicke, who did a really, really good job on Sunday. And you know who else looked at Sunday's game with a little extra juice?
Not the science guy.
The freaking kicker. Now, I know how this is going to sound, but I truly believe what I'm about to say. I don't want people to think I'm making a joke. I am dead serious when I say this. I'm going to remember this season for the coaching staff as the one coaching staff in the history of the NFL. It has to be in the history of the NFL. Somebody check with Elias. There has to be a stat on this. But twice this year, former kickers have flexed on the Panthers. Think about that. Graham Gano with the New York Giants, who's having a great year, talked about how that one was special for him. The kicker talked about how, yeah, there's a little extra something for me today to make these kicks as the Giants beat the Carolina Panthers. And then Joey Sly, who you'll remember at the beginning of the season when they let him go, I was convinced that this coaching staff ruined him by putting him in bad situation after bad situation.
And he ended up like in week 3 on the Texans and played against the Panthers.
And he's bounced around. Like, this is his third team of the year, right? So he gets elevated. He makes two crucial kicks to make it 27-21. In this game, and he posts on Instagram how he was back. That's a troll job of the Carolina Panthers. That's a troll of Cam Newton, because Cam Newton last week was like, I'm back. We're back. Joey Sly, I'm back. I hit two key field goals to win this game.
One helped by a penalty, by the way.
So that's twice the kickers have flexed on this coaching staff. How do you come back from that?
Maybe they don't.
You probably don't. You probably don't. Hour brought to you by the Duke Blue Devils as they host Miami for their final home game of the season, Saturday, November 27. Tickets include free parking. Visit goduke.com/footballticks. Let's do prediction payoff. Oh, I see. Let's Rand, you let me know when everything is ready to go there. So, back to the Panthers. Yesterday's loss probably sinks their playoff chances.
Don't do that.
But that's the thing. I said probably. I say probably, because when you step back from the immediacy of the game and being down in the dumps over a loss, there's 21 teams that are hovering between the records of 4-7 and 7-4. You look at the NFC South, and I'm not saying the Panthers are going to win the division, but the NFC South is a mess at this moment in time. And based on some of the results that I saw this weekend, I can't sit here and definitively tell you who's good anymore. I know who's bad, but I can't tell you who's really good anymore, who can't be had. The Buffalo Bills laid an egg. Suddenly, the Kansas City Chiefs are back. The New England Patriots find themselves as the darlings of the AFC again.
Yeah. Let me stop you, because it's over.
Yeah.
And here's why. These are the teams they'll be fighting against to get into the wild card.
You're talking about for the Panthers?
Okay. Ready? and you tell me what they all have in common.
All right.
The Philadelphia Eagles are 5-6. The Minnesota Vikings are 5-5. The New Orleans Saints are 5-5. And the Washington football team is now 4-6.
Mm-hmm.
So I just mentioned four teams.
Yeah, well,
the only team they can get into a tie with and have a tie over would be the Saints.
The Saints.
And yeah. The Saints, by the way, aren't going to be there.
They're not.
They don't have a quarterback. They took care of themselves.
I did not realize that the Panthers were going to be terrible against the division that I like to make fun of, the NFC East.
Yeah.
They've lost all the NFC East teams.
The Eagles somehow have figured some things out with Jalen Hurts.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what hurts about those games.
It's the roots. Remember, it's flowering now.
Right.
Nick Sirianni, the head coach, has talked about, you know, you just got to keep watering it, man. They've been watering it, and now they got flowers growing.
But it becomes a double whammy, right? Like, they had these winnable games.
Yes.
And when you don't bank them, you're like, well, now if we just beat Tampa on the road, oh, if we could beat Buffalo. We've seen this so many different times with NC State basketball, right? Where it's like, you know, we can still get in if we beat Duke on the road at Cameron. It's like, guys, you haven't beat Krzyzewski at Cameron since 1989. Okay, so stop. We could just get in. We beat Tom Brady, and then we, you know, the ghost of Joe Montana shows up, and we could beat him and Lombardi. No, just take care of what's in front of you.
On Friday, NC State hosts North Carolina. There's a couple of competing things going on here. One, Mack Brown at North Carolina is really good against in-state opponents. That has continued this year. It's all about that state championship. They've knocked off Duke. They've knocked off Wake. We'll see if they can knock off NC State on Friday. Slight problem, though. North Carolina, under Mack Brown, since they've returned, road night games have not been kind to the Tar Heels. I believe they're 1-9 in road night games. If you're going to take the next step as a football program, which is what Mack Brown's been wanting to do since he's returned, you got to win these games on the road. It's something they have not done, obviously. NC State enters this game, I believe, if I have this right, a 6.5-point favorite against the Tar Heels. I learned my lesson with questioning Vegas. Remember, all week leading into the Wake Forest game at Keenan, people were flabbergasted by the fact that the Tar Heels, given the way that they had been playing and given the way that Wake Forest had been playing, was, I think, a 2-point favorite or a 3-point favorite around that range.
Carolina was a 2.5-point favorite against Wake Forest at home.
And people were like, how, given how they've played? How'd that game play out? Pretty much how Vegas thought it was going to play out. So I'm done questioning Vegas. I get it. It's a home game for NC State. They probably look at these teams in similar fashion. Vegas sees how North Carolina's played on the road throughout the season, and they're going to factor that in. But there's a little bit more to this game on Friday. Not to say that NC State and North Carolina games don't always have something for everybody locally. It's not a rivalry that's going to get a lot of national attention, but locally, they always give us a moment that gets us talking, whether it's the Russell Wilson 2-yard Hail Mary, whether it's John Bunting trolling Chuck Amato at Carter Finley Stadium. Larry Fedora talking about, oh, I just saw two teams celebrating in the end zone, even though they were fighting, right? There's always something that happens in this game. This one, I feel, has more to discuss going into the game rather than us waiting for something to happen. And that is North Carolina trying to salvage everything they possibly can out of a disappointing season and playing spoiler for just about everybody. And then you have NC State that is trying to not just make history in terms of overall regular season wins, but also put a stamp on how they feel about disrespect. Because, Julio, now that we're finally here for game week between NC State and North Carolina, can we get to the heart of what the disrespect discussion from Dave Dorn really is about?
Yeah, that would be great.
Let's do it.
The disrespect is about Mack Brown gets all the attention,
mm-hmm.
certainly in the offseason, and Let me give you a little clue about what coaches actually care about. It's really not the media. It's really not what we say on the air or what anyone writes in the paper. It's recruiting. They care about recruiting. And what Mack Brown has done really well, other than beat in-state opponents, is recruit. That's what he does. So, and he gets this national attention. Remember, they began the season in the top 10. I've had many people point out to me, like, you understand if NC State began the year in the top 10 and they were 6-5 right now, you personally would be destroying NC State. And I would say to you, yes.
Yes.
That is true.
These are factual statements. Yes.
North Carolina had the fortunate circumstance of losing in their first game and basically the bloom being off their rose in week one
mm-hmm.
this year. Right? Yeah, they beat Georgia State and Virginia. But then if we go back to the tape on Monday, the 27th of September, I told you there's only one game left for North Carolina to play, and it's this Friday. And I still believe that, even though they have the win over Wake Forest. But this game, if you're Dave Doran and you missed the opportunity against Mississippi State, which was a, you know, a regional SEC showcase game, right? If you want to impress national people, you want respect, you beat somebody from the SEC, they lose in that game. Then you get the chance against Wake Forest, which would have made their path of least resistance, right? Like, they don't have to worry about Boston College on Saturday. They, if they beat Wake Forest, they're already the division champs right now, and this game doesn't matter. Think about the luxury that would have been for NC State on Friday night. So those are the two opportunities you had at respect. This is the last opportunity, and it's not just about the rivalry. It's about the thing that Dave Doran cares most about, and that's recruiting, and that's the off-season attention that Mac Brown's going to have. If Mac Brown goes 6-6, I get what happened last year, right? 8-4, they make the Orange Bowl. Nobody plays in the Orange Bowl, so they got a complete free pass for the Orange Bowl loss last year. Actually, they got a bump from the Orange Bowl loss last year.
Yeah.
Right? But if you're 6-6 and you go to the whatever bowl and beat whoever, not even Mac Brown can spin that.
I don't know, man.
Not even because you're going to have a new quarterback next year. That's the thing. That's the thing we as people who pick the seasons go, having a new quarterback is the one thing you have a really hard time selling.
There's a separate conversation about the missed opportunity that this year was with Sam Howell and what they had built towards early in Mac Brown's coaching return.
Yeah, he went. Well, actually, I take it back, and I understand your skepticism. He went 7-6 the first year, beat Temple in the Military Bowl, and did actually spin that into a positive. You can do that in year one. Can't do that in year three. Not with a quarterback turnover. And yes, recruiting has gone well for Carolina.
It continues
but,
to go
but
well.
But the results are not there for Carolina.
Well, that then gets to the other thing that I've said about North Carolina. There's just not as much heat related to North Carolina football as there is NC State football. If you want further proof on that, look at the basketball season so far for Hubert Davis. They lost twice in a row.
To Power 5 opponents, good opponents.
Good opponents. The biggest issue is their defense right now.
Not something playing any.
Something that we identified early on, even in the wins, that defensively North Carolina basketball has some issues. Apparently they don't play defense at all in Chapel Hill in the last couple of years, is what it is, right? And I am seeing it unfold the way that we called it at the beginning of the football season. If North Carolina basketball started out the way that North Carolina football has started out and they did not meet the expectations, there would be lots and lots of yelling and hand-wringing. Sure enough, we're seeing this play out in North Carolina basketball, as I predicted. They lose two in a row and people are freaking the hell out. And Hubert Davis has already had to pull the ripcord on the, this is unacceptable, we're going to get this fixed. I mean, he's already there, and it's still November, for heaven's sake.
To get back to Mac,
yeah,
and just to illustrate what he's been able to do, okay? 7-1 versus the Big Four. He's 11-14 against the other FBS teams that they've played. 11-14.
Mm-hmm.
They were preseason top 25.
Yeah.
Excuse me, preseason top 10.
I will push back on the idea that Mac can't spin that into a positive because everybody loves Mac Brown. And it's North Carolina football where the stakes, I've always argued, are never all that great. They just haven't been. People can talk about the stakes. The stakes just have never really been there for football specifically. But the one thing I did want to get back to as it relates to Dave Doran, the NC State head coach, it's not so much about the disrespect that he talks about, because that's what it's about. It's about Mac Brown and how they get all the attention.
Which is what he feels.
But he's right.
Right.
I want to make this abundantly clear. Dave Doran is right when he says that. I do not disagree with him with
this
that.
This is not being in the neighborhood with Roy Williams
no.
and Mike Shefsky.
No, no, no.
It's not
there's,
the same thing.
It's not the same thing. It absolutely is not the same thing because, you know, my attitude on this, when I see NC State and North Carolina football, I see the same damn thing. It's like
you
the old,
see the Spider-Man meme.
It's the old Office thing where they ask Pam, look at these two images. What do you see? Like, I don't see any difference at all, right? It's the same image to me. That's what I see with NC State and North Carolina, two historically 500 programs where we cherish the pettiness between the two programs when it comes to this game. But 3 years ago when Mac Brown got that job and there were some questions as to whether or not they should have gone in a younger direction, what's the return going to look like and everything else, my attitude was and continues to be the state of North Carolina is not in the same position it was back in 1997. There's better football being played in the state of North Carolina. The stakes are higher because of the ACC.
I know Duke, this results not, recent results notwithstanding.
But Duke is going to, more likely than not, make a change with David Cutcliffe after the season. And they're going to follow the Wake Forest path, and it'll be curious to see who they're going to hire. App State plays good football. ECU is not going to be a doormat forever, right?
Yeah, App State wasn't even in 1A football at the time.
Clemson is way up
now. Clemson comes and gets whoever they want out of the triangle.
It's a completely different dynamic. And also, I've made the argument that Dave Doran might get beat in recruiting in terms of what happens in the offseason, who gets wrapped up in four stars and five stars, but what's been the one consistency under Dave Doran since he's had that job? They might not have flashy wins, but they're putting dudes in the NFL. He can develop players.
And they'll have another one in Ike Ekwonu this year in the draft.
So my attitude was, cool, win the offseason, but I'm not quite sure I'm there yet to say that NC State is going to get left in the dust by North Carolina. Right. History tells me otherwise, okay? Right. The other thing, too, is I felt that Dave Doran was a different coach than the other guys who had been here before. And this all plays out on Friday. All of what I'm saying right now is moot if NC State doesn't win.
Right.
All of Dave Doran's disrespect card goes out the window if he doesn't win. And you want to talk about how this show would be if NC State had all the expectations of the offseason and they end up going 7-5, how would we treat it, right?
Yeah.
Well, guess what? You can't spend all season bitching and moaning about the lack of respect and the source of it being the guys up the way and then not do the damn thing. NC State fans are in the same boat. You can't sit here and bang on the media and bang on everybody. It's like, how come all they ever do is talk about these guys when you have an opportunity to shut them the hell up? If you don't do that, well, then what do you want us to do? How are we supposed to react to that other than, all right, put up or shut up? Well, I guess it's time to shut up if you don't win the game. And that's going to be why I have said for the last 2 weeks, serious butt-clenching time this week in Chapel Hill and in Raleigh.
Both places.
Yeah. Serious butt-clenching time this week. And I have not seen these two programs with lemon booty, as Bomani Jones likes to say, like this in a while, because both of them have a lot to lose on Friday in terms of how we talk about their programs. A lot to lose. Jonathan Jones, CBS, NFL Insider. He gets all the recognition. He joins us every Monday throughout the football season. Jonathan, what's up, man?
What's going on? How are you?
Good. Can you tell me who's good in the NFL?
No.
All right. Great conversation. We'll talk to you next week.
That was easy. No, I really, you look at the standings, you look at the Titans or the Rams or the Bucks or the Cowboys, or the Bills, you can keep going on. They've all had pretty massive losses in the past 2 weeks, and it doesn't make any sense.
So here's where we're at. A couple of weeks ago, we leave the Kansas City Chiefs for dead, right? Their defense is terrible. Patrick Mahomes has been figured out. There's a separate conversation to be had about Mahomes, but the Kansas City defense has actually been doing the damn thing here the last couple of weeks, including against a limited Dallas team yesterday. Buffalo apparently had the AFC East on lock, right? Now Josh Allen's breaking through. They got a great defense. Now they look like they can't get anything right, and Josh Allen might have been figured out. Meanwhile, the New England Patriots are not quietly anymore, but they're back in the thick of this, right? I am at a loss. Oh, and by the way, Minnesota looks like sneaky with Kirk Cousins after they beat the Green Bay Packers. So I know the NFL always wants parity, but man, oh man, they really do have this. What was the stat that I saw today? 21 teams hover between 4-7 and 7-4. That's wild to me.
Yeah, they've had 23 games decided by a game-winning score on the final play this season. So that's the most in something like 50 years. And it starts to make sense when you consider it. Teams are working and winning on the edges, in the margins, right? And you have to look at, okay, so the teams have dealt with COVID. They've dealt with how to improve their travel schedules, right? And the draft is the draft. People understand that I'm only going to hit on 40% of my draft picks. And so what we are seeing right now is everyone has caught up. And if you have a better quarterback, then you're probably going to win that game. But if you don't, then you're probably not. And that's going to be it.
And I understand the reasons why. Jonathan Jones, CBS Sports, joining us here on the OG.
I understand the reasons why the two teams that I watched yesterday between the Panthers and the Washington football team looked so similar, but it was like blinking and looking in a mirror, Double J, because you see all the jet motions and the shifts and the read options and the throws off the option, and I'm going, and everyone wants to play a two safety deep now based on, oh, well, we're not going to let you beat, we're not going to let you beat us deep, right? That's what I was. That was my concern watching the Panthers yesterday for Cam Newton and their offense. Everything was side to side. You know, the one touchdown to McCaffrey was down the seam, but that was it. Like, and that's the NFL now, right? It's like who can hit the two or three shots down the field. It's just such a homogenous game at this point.
Well, it is, and that's the cycle that we're experiencing right now in the NFL. I would say, as it relates to the Carolina Washington game, can Cam throw it down the field? That was what I was watching. Are the Carolina Panthers comfortable?
Are they going to let him throw it down
with
the
him
field?
Throwing the football down?
They might. I was going to say they might not let him throw it down the field.
And they may not.
Where's Robbie Anderson? The other is he on the team is, or?
Well, yeah, and he's come and gone, and so who really knows about him? But when I look at the rest of this league, you're right about too high. But it's not about just hitting the two or three shots down the field. It's about getting DPI on the two or three shots.
Yeah, on one of them at least, right?
And getting the football there.
Yeah, I had a hard time. Then the other end of that spectrum, I thought, was the late game between the Chargers and the Steelers. There was two teams just trading paint, and it's kind of like, well, when the thing goes south, nobody can play defense, right?
Right. And that's – you have Justin Herbert, and you have the Chargers special teams. When you look at the special teams group – they have not blocked a kick. They've had a punt blocked, which they had last night. They allowed 31 yards per return on punts. And that's how you're going to put yourself in a position to potentially lose a game. Ben Roethlisberger can't throw the football down the field. And so you should not be losing to the Pittsburgh Steelers when they can only run the football 12 times in a game. And so that's where the difference is. It's a horizontal league, as you noted, Julio, and it's just who has the better quarterback on that day.
Jonathan Jones, CBS Sports NFL Insider, joining us here on the OG alongside Joe Giglio. I'm Joe Ovias. JJ joins us every Monday throughout the football season. If you miss any of this conversation, you can check it out on the Best of the OG podcast, Apple, Spotify, Google, you name it. We are there. All right, so about Cam Newton. I want to get back to Cam Newton. I thought he played a great game. I mean, he throws for two touchdowns. He runs for another. He has the moment where he runs back to midfield at the Panthers logo, which wasn't there the last time he played for the Carolina Panthers because the previous owner wasn't necessarily cool with that kind of stuff, right? So that's a big deal, right? So
yeah.
I feel like this is actually going to expose the Panthers coaching staff more than it's going to expose where Cam Newton is at this point in his career. Is that a wrong interpretation of about what we're going to see the rest of the way? Because that defense is supposed to be a signature thing. They had a bad game against Washington. I feel like they were almost – I almost felt like Matt Rhule was trying to convince himself last week that Cam Newton's – about football, not about all the extracurricular stuff that everybody gets wrapped up on social media or letters to the editor of the Charlotte Observer. I just feel like this is something that is truly going to expose Matt Rhule for a guy who probably should be in college and not in the NFL.
Oh, that's strong right there, Joe. I'm not surprised by the result. I did have the Panthers winning. I thought that the Panthers were going to win based off the emotion of that game. And certainly when Cam scores that touchdown and runs to the middle of the field and does the celebration, of course, earlier in the week, he said, hey, this isn't about me. This isn't about two people. This is about 106 people. You know, that was an interesting little juxtaposition there. But the fact that that Ron Rivera was able to work in concert with Jack Del Rio, the defensive coordinator, and a number of defensive coaches who coached the Carolina Panthers when Cam was there, I was not surprised they were able to scheme up something that prevented Cam from winning the football game. You go back to week four, the Buccaneers and the Patriots. Nobody's saying that Cam Newton is Tom Brady, but Bill Belichick was able to keep Tom Brady to about 50% passing, no touchdowns, no interceptions, right? A passer rating of like 70 in that game. That's what happens when you face your former coach. They know your weaknesses and they're going to expose those weaknesses. So he couldn't throw the football down the field. They weren't going to let him get any cheap ones down the field, and they did not. And so they had to keep everything in front of them. Is this a referendum on Matt Rhule and on Joe Brady right now? I'm not entirely sure, but what I am most interested to see, I feel like maybe we talked about this last week, is Cam didn't put the 9 or 10 games on his shoulder that he normally would have in a season. Mm-hmm. And so he looked good yesterday, mm-hmm. And looked like he could throw the football. I wonder what that's going to look like in 3 weeks with 5 football games on that shoulder. And as it gets colder, that's what I'm looking for. And I don't know if at that point, if the Panthers offense is struggling and he's not able to throw the football down the field, if we can pin that necessarily on the coaching staff at that point, because of the limitations that the entire league knows about Cam, that certainly the Carolina Panthers knew about Cam when they brought him on in a sort of act of desperation, believing in this window where their defense is a good defense. And if they had J.C. Horn, maybe they'd be more consistent, but they aren't. And so they are what they are.
Jonathan Jones, CBS Sports NFL Insider, joining us here on the OG alongside Joe Giglio. I'm Joe Ovias. I want to drill down on my issue with Matt Rhule specifically. And you tell me if I'm out of pocket on this one. But last week I felt that Matt Rhule was spending way too much time in press availability acting as though we didn't know that Cam Newton was about actual football, that he puts the work in. As if last year, as Giglio likes to point out, Bill Belichick, the Patriots head coach, was in absolute love with Cam Newton. Mac Jones shenanigans aside this season, last year, Bill Belichick spoke very, very highly of Cam Newton, and the team also gravitated around him. I get the sense that when you're a college football coach, you are the guy. You are the culture, okay? And Matt Rhule truly believed that he was trying to build some sort of culture with the Panthers about football dudes doing football things. Cam Newton comes here, and what was the night and day from Arizona from the previous week? Sam Darnold ain't getting that. Teddy Bridgewater's a nice player. He ain't getting that. These guys gravitated towards Cam Newton. He is the culture, which is part of the reason why they probably wanted to move on from him in the first place. So he spent, I don't know how much time, I don't know how many audio sound bites you heard from Matt Rhule last week, but essentially it was, yeah, you know, I know people get caught up in the Cam Newton aura or this and that, but, you know, he's really about football. Yeah, Matt, we know he's about football. Like, you know, I don't need you telling me that Cam Newton's about football. We know this. It was almost like he was saying these things out loud to convince himself that he's not totally sold on the Cam Newton thing. Am I reading this wrong?
Well, I understand your interpretation that he was doing it for himself. And yes, he is trying to establish a culture there where it is we, not me. And there's no doubt at all that, listen, I mean, you can look at the Panthers' social media and Twitter feeds, and I think that a reasonable person can see that this is a team and a department that always knocks things out of the park, but that they have been a little bit more muted, if you will, okay, the last couple of weeks. Now, of course, they have to note that Cam is back, and they are doing so, but can you imagine all the incredible content that probably could be produced over there the last 2.5 weeks? that we're not seeing right now? And where does that come from? And so I would point you to the absence of what we all should be expecting and say that maybe that is your proof, that absence of evidence. But then also I would say, you know, I talk with plenty of folks who are down there. I live now in the New England area, and folks still don't really know that Cam is about football. Yes, Bill Belichick said it ad nauseum last year and spoke all so highly of Cam Newton, but we're still not that far separated, Joe, from having an entirely different conversation about the perception around Cam Newton. So when you say we know that Cam is about football,
yeah,
I mean, 6 years ago, quote unquote, we didn't know that Cam was all about football.
Yeah, well, I mean, how much of that is people being disingenuous, though?
Well, and it is, but that's also Matt Rhule, you know, taking up for his guy, right? I do think some credit should be given where, hey, if there are any doubters out there,
yeah,
that think that Cam is coming back here to sell tickets or that he's here to be an entertainer, an icon, or just to get off a couple of Instagram.
But both can be true. Cam Newton can come back.
But you better win.
Well, yeah, you got to win, obviously, but both can be true. We also have to be truthful about Cam's return in the first place. That stadium was it was not a fun place to go. Panthers fans were not showing up. David Tepper's looking at this investment and going, where is everybody, right? So there's an act of desperation, not just for winning football games, but for actually getting people to talk about the Panthers again. And that's the impression that I get from Tepper as well. He wants people talking about what he's doing. He wants people talking about the shows that are coming to Bank of America Stadium. He wants people talking about his MLS squad that's getting ready to start up. That wasn't happening with the moves that have been made. So I think both can be true.
No, they certainly can. And David Tepper, absolutely. But first and foremost, and this isn't to lionize David Tepper. Mm-hmm. He wants to win, and sure, he hasn't won anything. And so you don't swallow the pride that had to be swallowed over there. And things didn't end in flames between Cam Newton and the Carolina Panthers, but there needed to be some water under the bridge, and Carolina had to swallow some pride in order to bring him back.
Yeah.
And they did. But David Tepper wants to win because he's been a loser as an NFL owner. And this is the fourth season where he's been a loser, and he doesn't like that, especially a guy – there's only how many, a couple dozen people in the world who have more money than him. and so there is this insatiable hunger for finally becoming relevant. And you remember, you know, when he got there and he didn't like that the NFC title trophies had a prominent place in the building. And yeah, so now he moved those and put an empty trophy case in the middle when you walk in to let everybody know, hey, we haven't won a Lombardi, and that's the goal, that's the mission. And right now, it's hard to say that the Carolina Panthers are closer to winning a Lombardi today than they were the day before David Tepper became the owner of the team.
Jonathan Jones, CBS NFL Insider, joins us every Monday throughout the football season. Hey, man, have a good Thanksgiving.
Well, you got to give the Carolina grad a second here to give us his favorite memory of the State Carolina game series.
It's Friday, well, you know. I'm.
It could be his own memory. I mean, it could be his column about Russell Wilson, which he touched on.
Yeah.
You know,
no, I'm. I am a member of the 0-4 club of Carolina alumni who did not get a victory against NC State. So there aren't many favorable memories from my time in Chapel Hill against the Wolfpack.
So it's on the basketball side is what you're getting at.
Yeah, I remember
pick one
on
the basketball side, right?
Yeah, I think it was like 41-10 back in 2008, and we woke up walking around campus. That had been written in chalk all over the sidewalks, all over the brick sidewalks in Chapel Hill. So, yeah, I guess that'd be a memory. Wouldn't call it a favorite one, though.
It's a memory. That's a factual statement. Yeah, defense seems to be lacking in both the major sports in Chapel Hill at this moment in time. They got to get the basketball thing figured out here. All right, man. Enjoy your Thanksgiving. We'll talk to you next week.
Hey, same to y'all. Appreciate it.
Let's give you our hot and cold of the weekend. It's brought to you by Any Day Heating and Cooling. Spent a lot of time talking about football today. Could be some other storylines we haven't had a chance to get to. So we highlight them with our hot and cold of the weekend. Gilio, who is your hot of the weekend?
Has to be the ECU football Pirates.
Yes.
Their fourth straight win. They beat Navy 38-35 at the buzzer. More importantly, they did not cover. It was a three-point win. So congratulations to the Pirates. Now 7-4 on the season. They host Cincinnati on Friday in an interesting game, Joe. The Bearcats will see where they are in the college football playoff rankings, but certainly they can't get there if they lose on the road to ECU.
I understand the optimism of ECU fans, given how they've won four in a row. And obviously they're going to be up to be the spoiler for Cincinnati, but I can't imagine.
They've basically lost. They've lost four games, so they're 7-4, mm-hmm, right? They lost to Houston on the road in overtime. They lost at Central Florida, mm-hmm, by 4 points. They lost to South Carolina in a game they absolutely should have won three points.
Yeah.
And then they got roadhoused by App State. Yeah, but I'll be honest, after the App State game, I was like, what are you guys doing?
They've had a good season.
But they've had a really good season.
They've had a good season. Now, my point about Cincinnati is I cannot envision Cincinnati going into that game with any other mission other than to put style points on ECU. And I don't think, to me, it's not an indicative of where ECU's season has been. It's more about Cincinnati trying to prove something to the College Football Playoff Committee with one of their final opportunities. But we'll see what happens later in the week. My hot of the weekend goes to former Carolina Panthers kickers. Look, I know that I've made it abundantly clear that I am not sold on Matt Rhule and company for the Carolina Panthers. You know what doesn't help? When former kickers flex on you after wins. It's happened twice now to this coaching staff. Graham Gano did it when the Giants beat the Panthers. He had a press conference. He talked about how this one was special for him, given he didn't like the way things played out at the end there in Carolina. Then Joey Sly, who I'm convinced this coaching staff broke by putting him in bad kicking situations time and time again, he bounced around the NFL a little bit after they released him in September. He's landed in Washington, and he hits two crucial field goals to help win that game, what, 27-21. And Joey Sly gets on the internet and says, I'm back. Come on. How do you?
That's not bad. That's not bad.
How do you recover from that if you're the Panthers coaching staff where you've had not one but two kickers flex on you? So kickers, so hot right now. Who's your cold of the weekend?
You know, I was told 3 weeks ago that the Dallas Cowboys were the best team in the NFL.
Ooh.
Can we review what's happened since then, please?
Ooh.
Lost to Denver at home 30-16. Yes, they beat the Falcons, who are truly terrible. Then they lost to the Chiefs. All right, it's on the road, no big deal. They scored 9 points against a terrible Chiefs defense. Really? You're the best team in the NFL? I get it. At this point, no one wants to identify themselves as the best team in the NFL. But come on, Cowboys, you're better than that.
My cold of the weekend goes to the North Carolina Tar Heel basketball defense. They got some dudes who can score for the most part. I think that'll settle itself out. But the one thing that we've gotten in the early returns of North Carolina season is they're having a hard time stopping people. And this is back-to-back losses against Purdue and Tennessee. Now, Purdue's a good squad. Tennessee's a pretty decent squad, too. But not to the level at which they performed offensively against North Carolina. And when you look at the early returns on KenPom, they're like dead last in turnover percentage. They're not creating, what is it? Right now, teams are shooting an effective field goal percentage of 54.5 on them right now. That's awful. That's not very good. Hubert Davis, after the loss to Tennessee, said that it's time to self-reflect and these things are going to change.
You ask what needs to change. Everything needs to change. I was really excited about today's game. I was excited about seeing the response out of our team after playing yesterday and, the competitive spirit on both ends of the floor, particularly on the defensive end. One of the things that I told them, I said, you could be in the gym all by yourself. It'd be hard. Probably half the team couldn't shoot 65% by themselves in the gym. And so teams were doing that for us with us playing defense. And so from a defensive standpoint, it's not where I want to be. I'm very disappointed, but I'm not discouraged. Gives us an opportunity to really reflect and see what we're doing and the things that we need to change. And I guarantee things will change.
That was Hubert Davis, head coach North Carolina, after the loss to Tennessee, losses to Tennessee and Purdue. Not to say that these things can't turn themselves around. It is just November basketball. But right now, defense for the Tar Heels has been and making matters even worse, you can go at this team. That's what I saw against Tennessee over the weekend.
You've been listening to the Best of the OG with Ovius and Giglio podcast, part of the Capital Broadcasting Podcast Network. Brought to you by Capital Financial Advisory Group. Get your total retirement income plan by texting JOE to 21000. Don't forget, this podcast drops every weekday at 6 p.m. and you can find it at WRALSportsFan.com, the WRAL Sports Fan app, or you can subscribe for free at the iTunes and Google Play stores.